Opinions expressed on this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the management of Louisville.am and Veritas New Media, a Louisville.am production. Welcome to episode 79 of the Startup Podcast, Conversations with Louisville Entrepreneurs. 79 episodes definitely evidence that there is something afoot in Louisville in the startup community. There are things happening here, people doing things, people failing, lessons to learn from those and the people, and that's why we're here. So I appreciate you listening. Thank you for coming back if you're a return visitor. If you're a first-time listener, great. Glad to have you. It's a conversational time, and we try not to take up too much time in your week, but certainly enough to help you do what it is you're trying to do with what you're working on. This week we talk with El Toro CEO Stacy Griggs. He's been around town for a while, born and raised in Louisville, moved away, came back to town. He worked in the hosting industry for hosting.com and Maximum ASPs, some recognizable names around town. Now he's hemming the ship at a new digital targeting platform called El Toro. And if you know me at all, you know I'm come from advertising and most recently of a digital advertising background. So their product is pretty cool, the way that they target people and filter people through to deliver highly targeted prospects online. So it's definitely something worth learning about. It's a great conversation with Stacy. I encourage you to listen all the way through. Of course, you can always support the Startup Podcast in one of three ways. Subscribe on Stitcher or iTunes. Share our links from Louisville.am or on Twitter or on LinkedIn or Facebook or Google Plus or whatever you like to use. That's where we'd like you to share it. Or you could, of course, sponsor the Startup Podcast. We're rocking around 200 downloads a week. It's super targeted advertising if you're trying to get in front of people who are working in the startup community and you think you can help them out. Why, I can help you out. So I appreciate your support. Let's get busy. Stacy Griggs sat in the hot seat from El Toro on the Startup Podcast. You're new to El Toro, right?
I am.
But you've been around the block several times in the world of web hosting, mostly in like selling and management.
I was one of the senior executives for a local company here in Louisville called Maximum ASP.
Okay.
And we'd built that company up and sold it to a publicly traded telecommunications company called CBeyond about 2 years ago.
Okay.
And I'd stuck around with CBeyond as part of the transition management team and was running a couple of groups for CBeyond and was looking for something entrepreneurial to do again.
Running
and,
how? Like, what does that look like? I was running this.
I built their enterprise sales force for cloud. CBeyond traditionally sells telecommunication services, and how you sell cloud is very different than how you would sell a T1 line to someone.
Okay.
So we needed a different type of salesperson.
But you understand them both.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
But we needed a different type of salesperson to sell cloud than just simply communications. So I went out and hired 25 people and built a team to do that, and then we also needed a different type of sales engineer to engineer those deals. So went out and built a team of close to 40 sales engineers. And then prior to leaving, I was actually building their products to make the cloud easier to consume, what we call cloud enablement. Okay. They were, you know, cloud migrations, databases as a service. You know, most small businesses just they want to use the cloud, but they can't necessarily figure all of it out, and it's kind of hard.
Some people ask me who owns the cloud.
Yeah, I guess it would be me.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. We found him.
No,
I'm going to SEO the crap out of this podcast. Yeah. Who owns the cloud? It's right here. The answer's right here.
No, actually, nobody owns the cloud. and the cloud is many different things to many different people. The cloud can be software as a service like Salesforce.com.
Sure.
The cloud could be a platform as a service like Heroku or Force.com if we go back to Salesforce. They've also got Force.com, which is a platform that you can build applications on top of.
Okay.
Or it could also be infrastructure as a service, which is kind of where I came from, where we provided servers and parts of servers virtualized to replace buying a server and placing it in your office.
Okay, so your background is pretty much sales and let's call it revenue.
Yeah, yeah. I ran for Maximum, I ran what I would call order to cash. So everything from sales, marketing, billing, you know, everything except for the technical side of the company.
Okay.
And I've done the technical stuff too, but you know, I think the better place for me is on the kind of customer facing side of things.
You know, Maximum ASP came under my onto my radar when I signed up for a .NET Nuke hosting account long ago, but not through them. Ironically, it was through somebody else.
Well,
but they every time they automatically loaded a you know, a standard template, a DNN template, there was a Maximum ASP ad there. I'm like, oh, I bought from the wrong guy.
That was one of the most brilliant pieces of marketing we ever did. We did a partnership with DNN in the early days,
yeah.
And every time someone downloaded .NET Nuke or updated .NET Nuke, they got to see Maximum ASP. Proud host of .NET Nuke. In fact, CBN still hosts .NET Nuke corporate.
Okay,
today.
.NETNuke.com. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I've gotten away from using that.
Yeah, you know, I was a huge fan of .NET Nuke back a number of years ago, and lately I've been building a lot of things in WordPress just because it's so simple to use.
Right.
And the ecosystem around WordPress is phenomenal.
Right.
And not that the .NET Nuke ecosystem isn't great too, but I mean, there's just so many plugins out there and so many people building into that WordPress platform that it makes things so simple.
So you're a sort of my next note, my conversation starter. I don't ask questions; I have conversation starters. You clearly speak tech, but you also understand the selling side of things. Are you a tech guy who can sell, or are you a sales guy who can talk tech?
You know, I would say I'm somewhere in the middle. You know, I'm actually doing some IT consulting for some clients as a sideline today. After I left CBeyond, I was part of the sale when we sold Maximum ASP, so I was in a position where I wasn't necessarily working for a paycheck. I wanted to figure out what was next.
Nice work if you can get it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, it's that money's not going to last forever, but you know, it gave me an opportunity to take a little bit of time and you know, rationally think about what I want to do next. And so I started doing a couple of software implementation projects for clients. I would say I'm reasonably technical, but I'm not the guy to write code.
Gotcha.
And you know, the other thing is
you can translate
at what I bill. You could also get somebody much cheaper to write code. You know, so you know, what I'm doing for clients is helping them, you know, kind of conceptualize their projects, figure out what you know how to do things, make sure they get implemented smoothly, dealing with executives on questions. You know, kind of helping them kind of move the project through the pipeline.
Okay, for somebody who's working on their own thing. You have the sales, you know, moving product or service or whatever it is. And then you have the building of the thing itself and sort of the direction and the flow of and the creative side of things. For somebody who's starting up their own thing, what do you think is most important? Like if you were going to...
I would say that there's two types of problems in business. There's sales problems and there's everything else.
Everything else.
And, you know, as long as you're selling your product, you'll figure out how to make it better. But you know, if you've got a great product, but you're not selling it, then you're ultimately not going to have a business very long.
Right.
So you know, when I talk to
that's what they call a hobby.
Yeah. When I talk to lots of small and mid-sized businesses and entrepreneurs, you know, it's all about you know most CEOs are basically their lead sales guy. You know, their job is to go out and build and sell the product, and then you know over time maybe that role transitions a little bit. But you can even see that in very large businesses where you know. You know, somebody like, you know, Steve Ballmer still goes out and makes large enterprise sales calls with Microsoft, not because he has to, but because, you know, he feels that that's important to, you know, ultimately, you know, contributing to revenue at some level.
Well, and nobody knows the product better than the guy sitting at the top.
Right.
I mean, it's his thing. It's his lifeblood. It's his, you know, it's like the back of his hand. He just knows it front, backwards, and forwards.
Oh, so, absolutely.
Yeah, that's cool. I can get down with that. Sales problems and then everything else. So now CBeyond is done. You do some IT stuff, but you're heading up things at El Toro, which is a new sort of startup around town. How do I say this? Those guys have been around for a while.
Yeah, yeah.
But not doing exactly this.
Yeah.
So give us the elevator pitch. Tell us what El Toro is and what you do.
So the guys that had the idea for El Toro have been in the Louisville community for a long time. The concept was actually started as a side project from a product that they were doing for fraud detection for the credit card industry. And the concept was, you know, if you can figure out identity on the internet, if you can figure out the IP address from which a person is transacting their information and then map their identity to that IP address, it gives you a very good way to detect and prevent fraud for credit cards.
Mm-hmm.
So they built that product, and then they said, well, you know, we've got all this data.
Why did they build it?
They had a couple credit card customers.
Somebody commissioned them to do that.
That were interested in that product.
But their previous thing was like DNS. Now I'm getting way over my head with the technical.
Nobody understands DNS, man. They'd done some work in DNS. They'd also worked on a hosting control panel, and you know, so there were a number of different things that they had done kind of prior to this. I would classify them as serial inventors.
Gotcha.
They're very good at inventing technology, but they do need somebody to help them kind of commercialize it and turn it into. A company from a marketing and sales perspective.
Let's take this to market. Yeah,
how do we bill for it? Okay. All of those types of things.
Okay, so what is El Toro then?
I interrupted you, which I do sometimes
because that's how I roll, man.
It's your show, man.
You just gotta roll with it.
So once they had determined how to map IP address to an individual's physical address, they said, well, this could be useful for targeting internet advertising. When you think about targeting internet advertising, there's basically two ways to do it before El Toro came around. Okay. There were three. There was you could just put ads on the internet. You could put display ads, banner ads.
Puke them up there wherever there's an empty space.
Yeah, put thousands of them up there, and eventually one of them would find its way into somebody who was a likely consumer of your product. And since they were so cheap to buy 1,000 of them, you could buy 10 or 100,000. And, you know, just by sheer multitude of ads, you would eventually have customers that saw your ads.
Right.
So a couple years ago, it started to get a little bit smarter where people said, well, you know what? We could cookie people. And based off of the information that we get in these cookies, we could then target ads for those cookies. So from a number of third-party cookies, people started to buy that information for ad targeting. But the problem is more and more browsers are not accepting cookies. Users are not accepting cookies. And
and
the information in cookies just isn't very accurate.
I saw something just today. Today's the 21st, October 21st. This will run, not today, but
it'll run forever.
But Google, yeah, that's right. It lives forever. Google is releasing some sort of new thing that is not cookie-based.
Yeah, Google.
So they're, Google, the big boys are on
Google's leading the charge to get rid of cookies. And, to be honest, Google would love to get rid of cookies because then that leaves them as one of the few organizations that really knows a lot about you and your online habits.
That's true, because they are collecting it through Google Plus and through YouTube and all of the information that we're readily handing over to them.
Absolutely.
You bet.
So in addition to cookies, there was another technology that became prevalent in the last couple of years, which was geotargeting, where you could target a zip code or a zip plus four for ad delivery. Okay. And the problem with that is, you might be able to get down to a neighborhood of 4,000 to 10,000 people, but that doesn't mean everybody in that neighborhood is a likely consumer of your product.
Right.
So
even if you're a pizza joint in a neighborhood, not everybody likes pizza.
Right. I mean, so if you could, the idea behind El Toro was if we could take a group of people that were only interested in your product. A good example is we're here in Louisville. If Trinity wanted to advertise online, a school like Trinity or St. X knows who the kids are in Catholic families because they're the Catholic Church.
Mm-hmm.
They can get records of who the attendees are at a parish level. They could also figure out who has kids that are 7th, 8th grade kind of coming into that age, and we could place ads just on those kids. Parents' computers or household computers. We don't really map individual computers within a household, so we map an IP address to a household.
Right.
There's usually a number of devices within that household.
You bet.
But the interesting thing about that technology is it gives us a very effective way to target something that usually isn't very targeted, which is internet-based display and banner ads. There's a number of other ways to target internet.
Advertising has gone online from say 30,000 feet. Down to, with the cookies, maybe 17,000 feet or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the geotargeting, maybe we're down around 10,000 feet, but El Toro is really getting granular.
Yeah, El Toro's at 1 foot. The thing is, we've got clients that will come to us with a list and say, here's a list of our customers. and we would like to place ads just in front of people who've, you know, previously bought from us but aren't buying from us today. We can do that.
Okay.
You know, so it gives us a very granular way to be able to display advertising. And, you know, when you think about increasing the efficacy of advertising 6 to 60 fold, I mean, that's a huge increase in efficacy, and it's something that's very valuable to customers.
Okay. So where did the without, I don't want you to give away trade secrets or whatever the deal. I mean, this is a new technology. You guys created it.
We filed for patents. I mean, it's pretty cool stuff.
So you can share as much as you'd like or as little as you'd like. But where do you get the IP addresses?
So a number of things. We basically look at almost 40 different points on an individual. So we look at, you know, we incorporate some of the geo-targeting so that we know roughly where someone is. We also target some routing information that helps us get to a better idea of where they are. We also then augment that with transactional data so that, you know, we can use transactional data from any of a number of the things we get from our credit card fraud detection system that lets us, you know, lets us also augment who somebody is and where they come from.
It never even dawned on me that sucker's still out there running somewhere, the fraud detection. The original reason this thing was created.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. So it's some people may not even know what an IP address is, or they certainly don't know that they have one that can help identify them.
Yeah. But it's basically an IP address is, you know, it's, think of a physical address, but it's for the internet, so that, you know, your traffic can be routed to you and only you. You know, one of the things that sometimes educated people on IP addresses I ask about is that IP addresses change from time to time, mm-hmm. and that's true. You know, they don't change as often as you would think. It's, you know, on average every 9 to 12 months for somebody that has a has a wireless access point in their house. It basically the IP address changes when you reboot your wireless router in your house.
Oh, okay.
Or it could change depending on how your settings are. But you know, more often than not, it will change if you reboot or lose power. But the thing is, we then drop our level of confidence on that household. You know, if we see a new IP address get assigned to that household,
okay,
we'll say, well, obviously our information isn't any good any longer. So we'll drop that from the IP addresses we would use from a targeting standpoint, and then start rebuilding confidence for that IP for that new IP. And then only after we've seen a number of transactions go through, then we start feeling confident.
So there is, wherever internet is going into somebody's home, there is an IP address. So there are hundreds of millions of these things.
Right. And we look at about 30 billion transactions a day, sometimes up to 50 billion transactions. And we sniff all of those transactions for those 40 points of data that we were looking for. And then we use that to basically build our database, which is currently about 140 million U.S. households.
And mobile phones? I mean, your mobile, is that?
We catch mobile phones. We generally choose not to place advertising on mobile phones. You know, people use mobile phones for a lot of really cool things, like social media. They use them for checking in on Facebook. They use them for mobile commerce. People aren't looking at ads on mobile phones. Hmm. You know, the screen size is so small. You know, when we look, like I said, what we're looking at, we look at literally, you know, billions of ad impressions every day. And we see very few ad impressions that result in clicks off of mobile phones. So, it's part of our, part of what we would do in setting up a campaign for somebody that generally we wouldn't target mobile phones unless we were dealing with a demographic under 25 years old. And then if you're under 25, it's pretty much the only way to target.
You know how to get to somebody on a mobile phone?
Right.
Podcasting. Absolutely. That's how you do it. Is anybody listening out there? Huh? Crickets. All right. Never mind. So how did you get hooked up with LG?
You need a soundboard with crickets and everything.
You know what? I did. If I'm not an iPad person, I'm a Windows person. Then there's an iPad app where you can put together a little soundboard. I could plug it right in here and bink, you know, hit a button and, you know, the Roadrunner sound would come across. I don't want to be that cartoony, but some shows on the network would. Are you listening? LouisvilleBeer.com. Anyhow, how did you get hooked up with all this? I mean, advertising wasn't your thing before, clearly.
Yeah, well, building tech companies was, though.
Gotcha.
So, you know, before I was with Maximum ASP, I was one of the early executives at a company called Host My Site.
Mm-hmm.
We built that company up, got acquired by a private equity firm, then acquired Hosting.com.
And that's how you arrived in Louisville, correct?
Actually, we acquired Hosting.com. I was doing some work for Hosting, but I was also looking to move back to Louisville, and that's when I made the change to move back four maximum AFB.
Oh, okay. All right.
I grew up in Louisville.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah, okay.
I grew up here. I spent kind of all my formative years. I went to Doss High School. I attended the University of Louisville. Okay. And then I moved away for 15 years to Delaware, Philadelphia area.
Gotcha.
And then, but you know, it was exciting to be able to move back and have you know, family close. And
yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
you must feel like you won at that point.
Yeah,
well, I win.
It was nice, and it's certainly nice to not pay East Coast values for housing. You know, housing in you know, Philly, New Jersey, Delaware is crazy expensive.
Well, let's touch on that, because there's a lot of discussion about what makes Louisville a good startup town.
Mm-hmm.
For somebody to come move here and bring their company and bring their employees, like what are the differences between East Coast, even, you know, Boston is a hotbed for startup activity.
Well, it is so much less expensive to hire good people here. You also have a lot less competition. In my last job, I was for CBeyond, I was building a team of sales engineers nationwide. You know, it was focused mostly in 16 large cities. And it was difficult to find people with the same skill set that I can easily find them in Louisville in other cities. And when you could find them, they were 30 to 50% more expensive just because of the cost of living in a place like San Diego or Los Angeles or San Francisco. Whereas I could find people that were affordable and brilliant and all day long here in Louisville.
Yeah.
Then you look and you say, well, why is that? Well, it's because we've got lower cost of living, we've got lower cost of real estate, it is just a wonderful place to build a tech company. You know, the only thing I would change is I don't love the tax structure. You know, I think we could get better and we could have a better way to tax people. And you know, Kentucky's in dire need of some level of tax reform. You know, ultimately, I think that'll happen at some point.
When you were looking around the nation for people to hire, what city is comparable to Louisville in terms of attraction and cost of living and all of the things that you just mentioned? Who's our competition? If
St. Louis, Indianapolis,
okay,
our cities that I would see. If you go, you know, further out west, you can find some people reasonably cost effectively in Denver. You know, Denver's a place that's got you know, decent cost characteristics and is a fairly sizable city. I mean, there frankly aren't a lot of places that are as affordable as Louisville. In fact, I heard a lot of people in Atlanta, and Atlanta's a lot more expensive.
You bet. Yeah. So, okay, you moved back to town, and how'd you get hooked up with the boys at El Toro? That was my original question before I diverged. And
yeah, so they had a lineage in the web hosting industry, so they kind of grew up in that industry. And you know, being that there weren't a lot of folks in the web hosting and cloud industry here in Louisville, I would get together and have curry or beers and curry, depending on what time of the day it was, with those guys. And I'd see him every couple of months, and you know, we'd always talked about potentially working together. And you know, when this came along and I was available, something made a lot of sense.
I mean, it's weird how small of a world. I met them because, I don't know, one of them commented on Sean commented on a Facebook post of a mutual friend that lived in Boston or something, and I know, oh my gosh, this guy lives in Louisville, and he's talking about geodomains. I got something in common with this guy. So you just, you know, the contact was easy. Hey, we both know this guy. I was working at Louisville.com at the time. We should meet.
Right.
And it just becomes that, you know, that small thing. And then all these years later, here they are with this El Toro thing and firing it up.
And they're smart guys. They really are some of the smartest guys I've ever met. They
great guys too.
They're fun to be around and brilliant.
Well, okay, it's a small company. There's a handful of people.
Like six people today.
Yeah, I mean, it's small. And it's a new concept. And you know, as an advertising guy from the past, it's a crowded marketplace. I mean, getting ad dollars out of people is not the easiest job in the world. There's a ton of people out there doing ad sales. You guys have a new concept and a whole new, technically, I guess it's a new product. I mean,
yeah,
digital product. What's the biggest challenge for you to be able to grow? Is it going to be the ability to cover the market quickly and introduce this thing? Or is it a learning curve, like training the potential client? Or is it the ability to scale quickly?
For the most part, when we talk to customers initially, there's some disbelief. They don't believe we can do what we say we can do. And you know, because they've, you know, no one's ever come to them with this pitch before. You know, it's rare that somebody, I mean, you know, turning the tables, it's rare that I would ever hear something utterly unique from a vendor. And, you know, this is an utterly unique concept.
Sure.
So when you pitch it to somebody, they're like, oh, well, you're using cookies. Like, no, we're not using cookies. And, you know, they're like, well, you're doing geotargeting. Nope, nope, we're not doing that either. You know, we literally will match an IP address to a physical address. And, you know, so what happens is, you know, customers in many cases will start off with a test. You know, they'll say, why don't I give you, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 of, you know, what is, you know, a multi-million dollar ad budget and see how you guys do compared to how I would, you know, what sort of return on investment I would get for that same $5,000 or $10,000 using other online mediums. And, you know, that's a win-win scenario for us because we know the technology works.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we'll put something in place with the customer and then they just start growing from there. You know, we've even though we're relatively young, you know, the company's been doubling in size every month.
Okay.
I mean, literally every month we're, you know, revenue doubles. We've got, you know, large customers that have come in like Honda and Fiat and General Electric that, you know, have been just, you know, wonderful customers. And you know, those customers, once they get started on the platform, want more and more of it. So it's you know, it's the type of thing that.
So what you need is somebody to fill that funnel quickly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we've been using a lot of resellers. You know, to answer your question about, you know, how we're going to get out and get the word out. You know, I don't want to have to go out and build a 50 or 100 person nationwide sales force. You know, so it makes sense to partner with resellers that can go out and help tell the story for us.
Okay. So getting introduced to those people and into the marketplace, I guess the question was, what's the biggest challenge for you guys to grow? Would it be that?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it's keeping...
You can't do that fast enough, really, yeah, right?
I mean, there's a number of things when you literally are doubling in size month over month over month that, you know, kind of keeping the wheels on.
I guess,
you know,
if you have six people, somebody's got to get this stuff into the pipeline and yeah, get these projects moving.
Well, with six people today, you know, I would anticipate that by the end of next, by 3 months from now, we'll probably have 12. I mean, you know, I don't anticipate that we'll keep doubling month over month over month, you know, for 12 or 14 months. I mean, that would be just an impossible growth rate.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I can imagine a scenario where we grow, you know, 500 to 1,000% in the following year. And that's still a very aggressive growth rate.
So that allows you to hire the people that you need to get the campaigns running and creative. I don't know if you do creative or any of that.
We generally
things,
don't. I mean, most of the people that are reselling our campaigns are, you know, companies that, you know, have the capabilities to do creative.
Gotcha.
So we let them do the creative. We just use our technology for targeting and placement.
Okay. Well, my last question is always, how do people connect with you if they have other questions or their interest or whatever the deal is? How do they find you?
Stacy@eltoro.com. I'm all over the internet. If you just Google Stacy Griggs, I should be probably 7 of the first 10 results.
Eltoro.com is pretty sparse, I guess, at this point, which is fine.
We actually haven't even launched the website.
Yeah.
You know, it's more important for us to have the product launched and building the reseller channel than, you know, than having the website launched.
But they tweet, right? They followed me on Twitter.
Yeah, we did go ahead and get kind of all the social media handles because you know, we didn't want somebody else to grab them.
Right.
I mean, there are plenty of Mexican restaurants that would also be interested in the name El Toro.
Oh, burritos. Now you're talking, baby.
But we wanted to go ahead and grab the social media handles and that type of stuff. So we've got one of our guys that's been doing a little bit of tweeting for us.
Okay.
And, but yeah, it's been a rocket ship for the last. I mean, I've been on board there for about 6 weeks, and it's just been an absolute rocket ship.
As just a digital advertising guy, I'm always hip to the new stuff, and you're right, man. Nobody else is doing this. It's a great creation. So
it is.
Glad it's here in Louisville, and hope you guys stick around.
I hope it is.
Thank you for coming by.